Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. You know, sometimes, baby, I'm so carefree with a joy that's hard to hide. And then sometimes again it seems that all I have is worry. And then you're bound to see my other side. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. I get more than my share, but that's one thing I never mean to do, 'cause I love you. Oh, baby, I'm just human. Don't you know I have faults like anyone? Sometimes I find myself alone regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. 'Cause I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard, so please don't let me be.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to have just an off-the-cuff chat between you and me, us. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Greetings, welcome to another episode of Real Life. I am your host, alongside my co-host, Brother Roz. Brother Roz, how are you this evening?
Hey, greetings. I'm still learning. As you know, I had a rough evening, about a 3.5 to almost 4 hour ride home, so I was pretty upset to say the least. So I just had to get a check on my stress levels and just my temperament. But I'm okay. I'm glad to be on the air. I'm glad I made it home in time to have some time to prepare, so it worked out good, even though it was stressful. How's everything on your end?
Still learning as well. One day removed from All Hallows Eve. But before we get into that, you wanted to speak on something, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Wanted to say I'm a person who has never been upset about my African heritage. I actually have talked about it numerous times in regards to the fact that I know where in Africa my ancestors came from, that were born here on slave ships. So I never write about or discuss things in an anti-Black manner, and I don't post anything that's anti-Black. The only time that you will see me post anything that might seem to be or might deal with something anti-African is if it is a teaching moment in some form or fashion. Outside of that, I do not subscribe to that whatsoever. So just to clarify any potential confusion, I just want to make that just plain and unequivocal. You know, I grew up being taught by some of our greatest scholars from a very, very young age. So there's no way I could come up in the company of those giants and disrespect myself first and disrespect them and my ancestors to ever be anti-African in any way. So I just want to just lay that out and just end it there. Also, I did want to say, for those who listen to the network and get something constructive out of the different programs on the network, whether it's the COWS, New Abolitionist Radio, Tando, Tanya Free and Friends, or whatever the other myriad of programs that we do have on this station, please donate. That'll help us keep the station running and be able to make improvements and also do other things just to bring more high quality content. You can support by going to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com, and there you'll be able to make a donation. I believe there's an icon there where you can make a donation. Another way that you can support the network is to join BTR Community. BTR Community is a closed network, social networking system created by Scotty Reed. Again, thanks to you, Scotty, for us here, the people who listen to Black Talk Radio. And it's $24 for 1 year subscription. And you'll never see advertising because we do not get advertising dollars whatsoever. Your information will never be sold. You will not be data mined. No one will be able to you will not be adversely affected by participating in the network because it's a closed network. So you can actually discuss all kinds of things. That's what we do. We basically have discussions that pertain to all things that are about our people and things that we need to know, whether it's things to help you survive, things, what's happening like in the world right now that we should be paying close attention to, and just tons and tons of information. So I would say it's a great and very constructive place to just get with other Black people who are trying to do things for us or just learn more so that they can better navigate the world that we are subject to live in at this particular stage in human history. So if you do get something out of the network, I would suggest joining BTR Community because a lot of the radio show hosts are there, as well as a ton of really, really, really great, highly intelligent Black people having great conversations about things that pertain to us. So I just want to put that out there as well. Thanks for joining us tonight, this Tuesday evening, October the 30th, or like Jenna just said, All Hallows Eve. This is what the colonizers call it. So, yeah, thanks for joining us. We have a great live show for you tonight. So, did you have anything you wanted to add before we move forward, Jenna?
Now, just wanted to shout out Nina Simone, man, for that extraordinary explanation on different ways that we allow ourselves to waste time. I was thinking about the incident that I'm dealing with where I have allowed myself to have my time wasted. And that's what a topic comes from, time given versus time wasted. So if you would like to go ahead on and jump through some of these articles, both of us, I guess.
Absolutely.
And we can get that cracking. Sure. Oh, yeah, real quick, before you get started, just for those who check out the playback and you decide that you would like to call in and comment, man, that would be beautiful. That phone number is 704.
That's right. Thank you.
802-5056. That number again is 704-802-5056. Press star to put yourself in queue, and we'll get with you as soon as possible. But what I was bringing that up for is because I see it's a few people who call in. And what I do is that star is to unmute you so we know that you have a question or a comment. And that's why you get muted when you come in. I done seen that over the last couple of weeks. People drop off. I'm not being mean or trying to be facetious in any type of way. It's just to preserve the quality of the program as much as possible, as much as I don't mess up. So that's what that is. Yeah, I just want to throw that out there real quick.
Sometimes a person, for sure. I just want to say sometimes a person could have background noise or just people in the back when you first pop on the line, and it'll just throw off the quality of the broadcast. So that's the reason why everyone is muted. And then if you wish to speak, you have to just alert us that you wish to speak, because not everybody who calls in does want to speak. So just to be respectful to them and also to preserve the quality of the broadcast, we just mute everyone and then just wait for them to alert us via pressing star. So please do that. Again, that number is 704-802-5056. And again, press star if you wish to ask a question or to make a comment. And go ahead, Brother Jenna, if you want to chime in.
I just wanted to add that in. Don't want none of the listeners to think I'm running them off. So go ahead, though, because I know we're going to jump into the health thing first, and then we'll jump through some of these other articles.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into the health. Right now, the first article I'm to be dealing with is from naturalblaze.us, and it's the title is "Want Some Weed Killer for Breakfast? Here is what you can do to avoid the poison in nearly all dry breakfast foods." So what this article is referring to is the fact that glyphosate, which is the toxin that is used in Roundup, the same toxin that is killing the famous plaintiff against Monsanto, Dwayne Johnson. He has the same name as The Rock. That's how I remember it. And he won a $289 million settlement, and they dropped it to $39 million. But now it looks like the court is going to uphold it. I just don't know where the number is at now. Ultimately, they found that glyphosate in all dry cereal foods. So if you eat dry cereal, whether it's Captain Crunch, Corn Flakes, all of them have it. Everyone that they tested have it. Some have more than others. And a buildup of that toxin in your system will be devastating to your body. It can cause cancer. If you look up the story of Dwayne Johnson, his body is ravaged by cancer that was caused by him being exposed to it for 10 years as a lawn mowing man at a particular company, and that's how he got sick. So this is basically telling you how you can avoid utilizing cereals and avoid the poison that's inherent in the cereal itself. So I guess they'll be also providing safe alternatives that you wouldn't have to worry about glyphosate in. So this is what the article is dealing with. I would say definitely check it out. It's something that you need to know, because especially if you have young children, I'm pretty sure almost every household of everyone who listens on this line from the United States that has children is going to have dry cereal in the house. Mm. And it is toxic, basically. So just please, please, please read that article. It's posted in the thread for tonight's program on the Real Life the Radio Show thread on BTR Community. Next one is also from Natural Blaze. 5G is here, soon to be in 23 cities. Study: normal 2.5 gigahertz Wi-Fi damages your fertility. What is Verizon's 35 gigahertz 5G doing? So they're basically speaking about the fact that it's documented that 2.45 gigahertz Wi-Fi is damaging to the fertility of human beings. And they're saying with 5G, what else is it doing? And we've dealt with 5G and the dangers of 5G and how to mitigate protecting yourself from electromagnetic frequencies, also known as EMFs, by using orgone. That's O-R-G-O-N-E. The type of orgone that would be great would be amazonite, citrine, black tourmaline. Also, hematite is great for mitigating EMFs. Black tourmaline is at the top of the list. Shungite is at the top of the list. And we've dealt with those before. Also, to get a diode, you can get diodes from Dr. Delbert Blair's site. It's Meta Center Chicago. If you put that in Google, it should come right up. Now that he's passed away, rest well to the grandsister. His son now runs the site, so he sells the diodes to protect yourself. You can put it on the back of your phone case, and it'll protect you from the rays that come from it. If you don't have a diode on your phone, do not put your phone anywhere near your in your pockets because it's going to be near your sex organs, and it will it can cause cancers in the testicles as well as in the ovaries. For women, don't put the phone anywhere near your breast. It causes breast cancer. So if you have a diode, it's fine. It'll mitigate that. It'll actually turn the rays into harmless rays. If you don't have a diode, you are killing yourself. And also try to use a headset so that you avoid putting the phone to your head because it can cause brain cancer. One of the most famous cases of that is Johnny Cochran. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Next article is from Natural Blaze. Multiple studies show using CBD oil for sleep disorders may be your safest bet. I know the CBD, which is the non-psychoactive part of the marijuana plant. It's anti-tumor. It's also anti-seizure and a whole bunch of other things, anti-cancer. But also it's great for helping people with sleep disorders to actually get restful sleep. Again, it's not anything that they test for because it's non-psychoactive, so you don't have to worry about, you know, failing any sort of drug test. It's legal in all 50 states, and it can help you with a myriad of health problems, including pain as well. Is there anything else? I think that was it. Yeah, I think that was it for me. So you can get into the ones you have, folks. Yeah, that was it for me. Unless, oh, you know what? I don't think I opened all of them.
Yeah, you got the thyroid disease.
Yeah, I didn't realize I had to hit that button twice to drop them off, so I'm waiting for it to load up. I was like, that was pretty quick, but yeah. I don't think there's many left. I think I went through most of the ones I wanted to do already.
I see them.
But I just want to make sure that
you get it.
Okay. Okay. Oh, okay, there's a couple more. I see it now. It's coming up. One of them is about the 5 health dangers of high fructose corn syrup. That is from wakeupworld.com. I would suggest people read that because high fructose corn syrup is in the vast majority of drinks, especially drinks that are sweet, whether they're juices, soda, whatever it is. A lot of them have it in it, so you want to really try and get that out of your diet. And it goes into the different dangers, 5 specific ones, of consuming high fructose corn syrup for long-term, which would definitely can lead to diabetes and all kinds of other problems just because of the nature of the product itself is toxic to the human body. The next one is from SilverEdge.com, Silver, Nature's Best Wound Healing Wonder. Now, this I can speak of from personal experience. When my father-in-law had bed sores, we were able to use Silver successfully to really facilitate his healing. And sadly, we lost him, but it's something that I saw and the doctors saw, and they were quite flabbergasted with how quickly, and he was 88 at the time, an 88-year-old man was able to heal. So I just wanted to put that out there. The next one is, okay, I'm going to go down. The next one is, I believe, also from Silver Edge. Yes, the new flu drug cuts one lousy day off of your flu for a whopping $150 per pill. So it's basically comparing the new flu drug to colloidal silver, which has been proven to kill the influenza and of basically all types. So compared to the vaccine they give you for the flu, which is actually more dangerous than helpful, and we've discussed that before.
Yes.
Next one is from Wake Up World. Also, I just want to run through these. I know I want to get to the main course tonight. So the next one's from Wake Up World, thyroid disease linked to iodine deficiency in fluoridated water. You definitely want to make sure that you don't have fluoridation toxicity, because a lot of us do, especially if you drink tap water. And then if you use it to brush your teeth and all of those things, they infuse the water with fluoride. Fluoride is actually radioactive. It's one of the things that is utilized in making atomic weapons. So a lot of the information about it, as far as it being anti-cavity and stuff, is crazy. You want to look it up online for yourself, especially fluoride toxicity, because a lot of people have those symptoms and don't even know it.
Hey,
and
I mean, just to go by the packaging when it tells you harmful if swallowed, you know, that should be an indicator.
Yep. That's true. But the crazy part is you're still absorbing it through your skin, because, you know, your mouth is skin, and skin, you know, it's the largest organ in the body, but it also absorbs what's touching it. So even if you're shaking your mouth out with mouthwash that has fluoride in it, you're still absorbing it through your gums into your bloodstream directly. It's just worse if you swallow it, because you're getting a more intense dose, but it's, you know, basically the same thing, a slower you know, mode of toxifying yourself versus swallowing it being the quicker mode of doing so. I believe this is the last one now. This one is how stress, this one's from psychologytoday.com. Chronic stress can damage brain structure and connectivity. What they have found is that the human brain actually shrinks when you are subjected to chronic stress all the time. And it's really, I even saw something on my local news about it, and then that's what made me look up the article, because they were saying that the sheer amount of brain mass that can be lost just from being subject to stress all the time is phenomenal. And I'm just thinking, how many of us Black people that are subject to racism, white supremacy, are dealing with that type of stuff, especially if we're people who don't read, so we're not using our mind in ways that are expanding our consciousness, which will help it to grow, even if you are chronically stressed. So if you're a person who doesn't use your brain, you know, regularly as far as just reading and just, or just different means of educating yourself, and on top of that, you're dealing with stress every day and you're not doing anything to help mitigate that stress, whether it's exercising, which is great for stress, talking it out, maybe seeing a therapist, or if you have a close family member that you can confide in, but just having an outlet, then the damage that chronic stress from racism, white supremacy, and then just daily life as a Black person can shrink your brain. So this article goes into that. So with that, I'm done, and I'll cede the floor to you, Jenna, so we can go through the articles that you have. And I saw the clip of Kwame Ture, so I found that quite interesting. I didn't see a title on it, so go ahead.
Yeah, that was just something that I just shared that all of us need to go check out. It's a lot of us who done heard of him and read a little bit about the Black Panthers and what have you. But these are words spoken from his own mouth. And I thought it was just very important to just check it out, especially in the times we're dealing with. Anytime is great, but particularly now, I think it needs to be heard. So all of y'all go to BTR Community and check that out in the real life thread for this week. First thing I want to get into is, and I'm just going over this briefly because I think it pertains to what tonight's discussion is about. And it is coming from Mail Online. Trump plans to Trump plans to terminate ridiculous birthright citizenship, meaning that if you come here to the United States, have a baby, as you put it, Rise Anchor Babies, then you have a better chance of getting citizenship here, and he's going to cancel that altogether. So, but what happens when we see headlines like this? We automatically begin to, even with other Black people, we end up debating each other about how important it is over some other subject. So y'all can go check that out, because it could threaten people if you are foreign or marrying somebody foreign or friends with somebody foreign. You know, these type of laws that's getting ready to be initiated can be a huge effect in your life personally. What you say, Ross?
I'm going to say they actually changed that law originally in the 90s, because I'm the only person in my family born here. And that is how my sister and my mother got citizenship, was via the fact that I happened to be born here. Right. And I remember my mother never told my father the process or what to do. So I remember he had told me he was having a discussion with somebody else on his job, and that's how he found out about it. And it was literally like within the last year before they terminated it was when he got his citizenship. And I remember he was really mad at my mother for not saying anything. But yeah, so they did start to make those changes back in the 90s. I just think they tightened up even more now, because it's even to the point like you can marry a foreigner and your spouse be deported and all of that type of stuff, which that wasn't the case before. I mean, even to the point where people used to pay people to marry them. You know, that was a racket back in the 90s and in like the late 80s. There was a racket for somebody to come from another country, marry a person. You know, you try to take a few months to get to know them because they question you about, just to make sure you're quote unquote in love and all of that stuff. And so that's now even being compromised at this point. And lastly, I just wanted to say briefly, Kwame Ture was actually the ancestor that really set the trajectory for my family and for me personally. Him and my parents are from the same place, Trinidad and Tobago. My father never met him there. He met him here while he was in college. And it was Kwame Ture who actually put him on to First World Alliance, which was created by Dr. Ben, John Henry Clark, John Jackson, Chancellor Williams, and a few other scholars in order to teach us. And we would go to different places all around the city to be taught by the greatest of our scholars. And it was without my father meeting him, and he spent some time with him on a few occasions, and that's how he learned about that, and that's how we got immersed in the struggle for liberation here, and also during the 80s fighting for the liberation of African countries via protesting at the United Nations when I was a child. So that particular grandsister has a special place in my heart for that reason. So, yeah, I just wanted to say that. Go ahead, Jenna. I'll be silent now.
Nah, 6 degrees of separation, man. You've been talking about it for the last couple of weeks. Look how I show up.
For sure.
Okay, this the yeah, got me thrown off. The rest of these are just articles that I went and found pertaining to tonight's subject. This one is from this is an article from "The Body Is Not an Apology." The Body Is Not an Apology.com. 6 ways well-intentioned people white-splain racism. The reason I put that in there, and I just, let me just give you the rest of these articles real quick and I explain.
Mm-hmm.
This next article. This next article is "The Black Impact." Customer categories where African Americans move markets. And this comes from Nielsen.com. Now this talks about the purchasing power of the black community. So y'all go in and y'all check that out. This next article is from TheRoot.com. 10 ways black people keep racism alive, according to WIPO. Now, I just want to read these little tidbits that they had for these 10 points. And then we can jump right on into the show, Ross. This first one, excuse me, my computer is acting up for whatever reason. But going down in a descending way, number 10 is play the victim. That's number 10. Number 9 is engage in identity politics. Number 8, make everything about race. Number 7, discuss history. Number 6, be a reverse racist. Number 5, use facts.
Classic.
Number 5 is use facts. Number 4, mention the words white privilege. Number 3, don't blame black people. Number 2, say white people. And number 1, the most important, is be black. Those are 10 ways that black people keep racism alive, according to WIPO. Now, looking at this, some people may just gaze across it and assume that the author of the article was, that's what he was saying. But he doesn't work for WIPO. And one of the things that happened is that 2 different people will see this. Or somebody will show it to someone else. We do this all the time. And then start arguing on the meaning without going into the actual information and seeing what's being said. When we both have destination, and this could be on racism, this could be on slavery, this could just be getting through the day at work. But because we don't follow each other's ideology, we'll we'll give all our time into proving the other is wrong. I've been engaged in this, and I counted my time and seen how much I lost. So when I say this is for all of us, I mean it's for all of us, myself included. But what we do is we take that time and we begin to gain just disgust. And then we practice it on other black people when they come around. Now, before I continue on, Roz, do you disagree or have something to add to that, or shall I continue?
Yeah, I do. I just say, because it's easy for us to do that. I mean, I've done it before. And I used to have lively debates on allhiphop.com many, many years ago. And I would, you know, just assault people sometimes because, you know, I would just, in some cases, read the title of some article they put up there, and the title alone was so just ridiculous. And I wouldn't even take the time to read the rest of the article because the title alone says something that was off-putting, and go in. And then at some point, the person will respond and tell me, well, what you're saying is actually in the article if you took time to read it. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then I took time and read it. And, you know, the corrections that I thought I was making based on just reading the title, the article was more, the title was meant to draw you in to make a specific point. So I just had to go back on there and just apologize, you know, because that's one thing I think is just important, the ability to just say, hey, I was wrong. You know, none of us are perfect. You know, we all, you know, make mistakes, and sometimes we can jump the gun. So I try my best to read or just digest something before responding so that I can give a holistic answer. I'm not always perfect at it because sometimes I'll be posting things while I'm at work. And, you know, I'm not always able to read everything because I have to focus on my job too. So sometimes I'll post something with the intention of going back and looking at it later on when I have time, but I don't want to lose the article, so I'll just post it so I can check it out. And somebody else will read it and just say, hey, there's something off-putting in this article. And I'll say, oh, and once I read it, I understand and I'll remove it if it's incorrect, or, you know, just make a correction or whatever the case be. So there's a myriad of circumstances, but I just agree in the sense that I think that we live in a very microwave world where everything has to come fast and hard. And if it doesn't come fast enough, which is in a few seconds, people just discard it and keep it moving. Recently, I saw a video on YouTube where they were talking about the fact that humans' attention span used to be 12 seconds. Now, our attention span is shorter than that of a goldfish, which is, I think it's either 8 seconds or 6 seconds. So, because, and a lot of the reason that they attribute that drop in attention is due to our fascination with technology and apps. It has us in a frame of mind where a lot of us are losing the ability to focus and concentrate on things for long periods of time, because we spend our time going through fleeting things, flipping through articles, flipping through this, flipping through pictures, flipping through Twitter texts or Twitter posts and all kinds of stuff. So we're getting quick fixes all the time, and we don't have time to act. We don't take the time to see something through from start to finish, because it takes a certain level of concentration that we've lost now due to our addiction to technology. So that's what I want to say about that.
Oh, yes. Technology is always going to be a part. Me personally, I think it's the way you use it. And I think we talked about this last week about, yeah, it's horrible. And it is a way to try to destroy us a little quicker. But while you have to deal with it. And you have to deal with it constructively. Mm-hmm. Especially with your time. I got this other article, and it was talking about just the precious time that we have, whether we're talking about at work or at home. You know, you have something from Gus. So me knowing I have to play that clip made me think about him. That's what you always hear on the cows. Shout out to the cows.
Yeah.
Is you he have always to, says it do something
before each show, like the end of each show.
Do something
I hope,
productive.
You know, this show is worthy of your time and energy.
The because two your time
biggest
and energy
commodities
is so
we
precious.
Have is our time and our energy, and I would add to that our attention. Those are the holy trinity of human existence in today's world: time, energy, and attention. What occupies your attention is occupying your time. What's occupying your attention and your time is also using your energy. So they are separate, but they work in concert and they work separately from one another as well.
And what is the new economy that's blossoming
the attention
right
economy.
Now?
The attention economy. How long can they keep your attention? How long can they keep you using the app? I went to a psychology conference last week for my company because we deal with mental health. And it was a very interesting thing because one of the panelists is she has like over a quarter of a million followers on Twitter. This white woman, she's like 42 years old. And she said that she's in contact with the people who own Twitter, who run Twitter all the time. And one thing that asked her and a bunch of other people that, you know, that are like her, that are using their platform for and think they can do to improve it. And one of the things they discussed was removing people's ability to see how many likes you get on a post and people's ability to see how many friends you have. Mm. Because people have committed suicide just off of that. They believe that if they only have 3 friends, but their friend has 300, that their life is worth less and they'll kill themselves. And she told like a couple of stories of children who hung themselves just because they didn't think they had enough friends, or they put a post up and they felt like they didn't get enough likes. So she said that would nix that. She said, why does the world need to see how many likes that I have or how many friends that I have? That's not their business. If they want to, you know, have me as their friend, then fine, but they have they should have no reason to see my stats. But what she doesn't understand, and I didn't get to talk about it in the conference, is that that's how Twitter makes their money. If they took away the ability to see how many friends you have and how many likes you have, there would be no Cardi B. That is how Cardi B's career started. She was on Twitter, and she had like a couple of million followers by the time she was ready to immerse herself in the music as far as really doing it professional. She was doing mixtapes and all of that stuff. But she literally had a couple of million followers before she got onto All Hip Hop, and it blew up even more. Mm. So without people seeing all of that, she would have never got any record label attention. She would have never got any of that because people would be like, well, who's this? We don't know you. We can't see how many friends you have. We can't see how many millions of people's attention you hold. That's how you get paid. I got 2.5 million people's attention. You think that Coca-Cola ain't going to try and get at you to get at that 2.5 million people whose attention you hold in the palm of your hand? Come on now. So that's what I'm talking about. It's about that's the attention thing. How long can you hold people's attention? How much time you're utilizing of their own that they will never get back to hold their attention? And all of that time and attention is draining them of energy that they will never get back. They have to replenish it, but they won't get it back. Remember, the brain uses more energy than any other organ system in the body on a regular basis because it's the control center. So when you're staring at stuff on the screen and going through that, you're using energy. Those brain cells are triggered, but they're triggered in an addictive fashion. That's the difference, is that you're literally becoming addicted. All of these things, we've talked about it, we played documentary clips on it. They're designed by a world-renowned psychologist who gave the 20 to 25 tech experts who create all of these apps and who build all these different things. I used to know one of my closest friends who passed away. Hmm. You know, they got an algorithm for addiction, and they have basically been able to utilize that from dealing with this psychologist. He actually trains all of them on the West Coast. And that is how they develop these things in order to hold your attention. And they have found that the same brain centers that are triggered in addicts is what's triggered in the minds of regular people when they're using these apps and these phones and these different forms of technology. That's keeping their attention. So I'll just leave it there. But we have more than enough programs we've done on that. So if you go into the archives, you'll find like detailed information from the experts who actually none of them use their own stuff. There's people who ran Facebook who do not use Facebook. They did not use any technology. All of them send their children to a special school on the West Coast, and the school does not allow technology in the school. They do not have computers. They do not allow tablets. They do not allow cell phones. They use a blackboard and chalk, and they use a paper book, like how I used to do when I was a child. But if you go to all of the quote-unquote modern U.S. schools, all of those children have computers and tablets and textbooks. I mean, and all of that, there's no textbooks anymore. And I remember a couple of years ago, there was a child who was given a laptop by his, a junior high school child by his school, and found out that one of the staff was remotely turning on the camera. And they were able to see and hear what was going on within the span of that computer, because he never had his camera covered. So they would be able to see what, so if he was getting undressed and that camera, you know, the laptop was facing him, and the person turned it on, they would have seen him getting undressed. Whatever he was doing within the scope of that camera's field of vision would be picked up, and he could also hear the sound. And he ended up getting arrested. So these are also things you have to be careful of when you're getting this technology from these schools. Sometimes you have freaks and perverts that are actually teaching your children. You just don't know it until they get caught up in a scandal. So let me shut up and leave it there so we can continue.
Nah, you a fan. You a fan. While you was explaining that, it was making me want to, I was going through a thread, and it was talking mm-hmm. about cognitive dissonance and cognitive bias. Yes. So did you want to get into that before we jump back into this time wasting and what we can do?
You mean that video on cognitive dissonance that's in the thread?
Yes. Because
that's a really short one too. But it really explains it in a way that just really makes it plain. And I think if you listen to what he says and how he breaks it down, because it's really like it's like a glitch in the way your brain computer functions when you're in a state of cognitive dissonance. And either you have to lie to yourself to get past it, or you have to accept the new reality that trumps what you thought was true, and then change your behavior to coincide with the truth that you now have. Otherwise, you're basically living in a state where you have to lie to yourself in order to make yourself psychologically comfortable to get past that psychological glitch in order to keep living a lie. So when you see people that you might have a discussion with and you present them with information that completely rewrites a certain aspect of a subject that they thought they had a handle on and they thought they knew inside out, if that person does not choose to accept that new information that is being proven to be accurate and correct, then that person is literally walking around in a state where they are not living in reality, but it's a choice in order to get past that mental glitch. So, yeah, definitely. I think that'll be a good one to play, because I think a lot of times we don't realize how cognitive dissonance wastes time.
Well, and that's when I seen it. That's why I wanted to go ahead on and add. So let's get this going right quick.
Okay. Let me mute myself.
Person who might have two distinct things are good. Chances are good that you've heard of something called cognitive dissonance. It's a term that's starting to get thrown around a lot these days. But you might not know that it has a really deep root in classic social psychology. In 1957, Leon Festinger wrote a book on the theory of cognitive dissonance and outlined a really detailed understanding of what cognitive dissonance is and how people deal with it. Let's start out by talking about what cognitive dissonance is. How would we define it? At the very basics, cognitive dissonance is about inconsistency. When we hold two thoughts that are inconsistent with one another, basically, that's dissonance. So let's take the example of someone who smokes cigarettes. Here's a person who might have two distinct thoughts, one of which is, I regularly smoke cigarettes. The other of which is the knowledge that smoking cigarettes is unhealthy. Here are two thoughts that a person can be having at the same time, acknowledging both of these things as fact, but they would seem inconsistent with one another. If you know that smoking is bad, then logically you probably wouldn't be engaging in that activity yourself. And so this is a case of dissonance because there's inconsistency in your own thoughts. So what do people do when they experience cognitive dissonance? Well, there are a few ways in which Festinger said that you could resolve the inconsistency as a way of resolving the dissonance. First, you can change one of those thoughts. So in the case of the smoker who realizes that smoking is bad and also that he is a regular smoker, he might change one of those beliefs and go, smoking's not that bad. It's actually not unhealthy to smoke. That would be changing one of your cognitions, one of your thoughts, as a way of restoring consistency. Another thing you could do is change your behavior as a way to restore consistency. So in this case, the smoker might say, well, if I acknowledge that smoking is bad, then the way I can be consistent is to stop smoking. So changing one of the behaviors that's related to the inconsistency. Another thing people can do is to add new thoughts into the mix, thoughts that help rationalize the inconsistency. So someone might say, yes, smoking is bad. Yes, I smoke regularly. But also, I do a lot of other healthy behaviors. I eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, and I exercise a lot. So I'm adding new thoughts as a way to reduce the problem of inconsistency. And finally, people can just trivialize the inconsistency completely. They can just say, you know what? Sure, smoking's bad, and I smoke, but I just don't care. And that's going to be it. That's not really as big of a deal as people say that it is. That would be another way of resolving dissonance.
Man, that's tobacco.
But why do people feel like they need to resolve anything at all? What's the big deal about dissonance? Well, some people say that dissonance just gets in the way of finding some sense of truth. In general, if we want to understand the world, then we want a clear, consistent picture of it. And when anything that makes us feel inconsistency is something that's a problem, and we're motivated to restore consistency again. But most of the research in dissonance has looked at something a little bit different. And that idea is that it's physically uncomfortable to experience cognitive dissonance. There's actually some negative physical tension that you feel anytime you recognize two inconsistent thoughts or realize that you've done something through your behavior that contradicts your true attitudes and beliefs. And so lots of studies have shown that this is the case by hooking up different sensors to people or tricking them into thinking that some pill makes them feel uncomfortable when in fact just their inconsistent thoughts is what's doing it. All of this research you can find more about in my blog post on this topic, but suffice it to say that for the most part, when you feel cognitive dissonance, you're feeling actual physical discomfort. You're feeling inner discomfort as well. And anytime we feel bad, we want to feel better. And to feel better, we just find a way to be consistent again. That's the driving force behind cognitive dissonance. It's worth pointing out that there are a couple times when dissonance is especially likely to motivate this action to resolve the inconsistency. One of them is the perception that you had some choice over the inconsistency. So sometimes in cognitive dissonance studies, what they'll have people do is agree to write some essay arguing against their own beliefs. So if you don't believe that your school should raise tuition, if you agree to write an article saying that your school should increase tuition, then that would be a case of dissonance. However, it would only make you feel that dissonance and that motivation to resolve inconsistency if you felt like you had a choice over whether or not you wrote that essay. If you didn't have any choice, if someone literally says, you have to write an essay before we can let you leave, and it has to say tuition increase is good, well, then you didn't have any choice over it, and it's not really that big of a problem. It's when you realize that you did have a choice and you chose to do the thing that contradicts your own opinions that you have to then find some comfort within yourself by resolving an inconsistency. In this case, convincing yourself that you actually do like tuition increase. The other thing that has to be there, according to a bunch of research, is the perception of aversive consequences. In other words, you have to think that the inconsistency in your thoughts is going to play out poorly for some reason in the future. So let's say you did write that essay saying tuition increase is good. If you believe that a school administration is going to read that essay and then say, hey, students think this is a good thing to do, there's a negative consequence. There's a negative consequence of your inconsistent actions. Now you're even more motivated to resolve the inconsistency and figure out a way to think that tuition increase actually is a good thing to do. Hopefully this helps clarify what cognitive dissonance is. Now the next time you're at a party and someone throws around the term dissonance because you go to some pretty crazy parties, you'll now be able to nod your head and actually know what they're talking about.
Well, that's one way of thinking about it. I think he made a lot of good points. But it does speak to tonight's title. I think people are going to believe what they're going to believe no matter what they read, hear, or see. And sometimes we just run into people who intend on making your day miserable. So whatever you say, they go against it. Always working against you. And I think,
but you know what I got from that video too? I don't know if you might have. I think you probably did, but just didn't say it. So I want to say it because I think it's appropriate. What he was describing was the fact that whether you are consciously aware of it or not, you judge yourself by your beliefs. And when you do something that's inconsistent with what you believe, you actually suffer physical discomfort. He said it. And see, dissonance is something we learn about in music. When you're making a track, if you have two sounds that don't blend well with each other, that's dissonance. You're going to get some sort of sonic clash that's uncomfortable for you to listen to or just sounds terrible. So that's where I first heard the term dissonance, was when I was making music and rhyming and producing and all of that stuff. That's where I first heard of that term dissonance. And then as I got deep into my studies, as far as just, reading books on psychology and Dr. Marimba Ani's work and Dr. Wilson's work and stuff like that, that is where the term cognitive dissonance came around, especially when Dr. Georgia Gould wrote Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome.
I understand. And it's very important that we all can recognize that in other people, because we have to recognize that. That's the point that I was getting to. Mm-hmm. Is that when you have any kind of view, as long as you have an understanding of what's going on, you can avoid that. But we tend to go toward that instead.
Yeah.
We go and jump right on into the argument because we want to prove to them that they're wrong, when we really should be continuing on with what we was doing. After you see somebody just can't get it, or they're determined to have regardless if the information you're providing is accurate or not, they just want to get at you, fuss and match or what have you, let them be. We have no obligation to force this information on them. And we end up wasting our time instead of giving it to something productive.
Can I chime in on what you just said?
Yes, that's exactly what I was waiting for your response.
I've come to this understanding, and I could be incorrect. It's just been my life experience being a black male in America, having a myriad of experiences from a very young age with this system, and just dealing with other black males like myself, especially when I was young, wild, way more confused and much more violent and volatile. We live in a society where we're invisible. And that's why I love that work by Ralph Ellison, The Invisible Man. It's one of my favorite books. Gus always says it's in his top three or top five. I think it's in his top three of all time. It's mine too, because he really breaks down the concept of being invisible in a society where anything you say is not believed because you come from the group that is oppressed. And as a result, we're seeking that validation from each other. And that's where I think the disrespectful encounters that surround cognitive dissonance is coming from. Dr. Joy DeGree, she said that she went to Ghana, and when she went there, she, as a psychologist, she always liked to pay attention to her surroundings, see how people interact, how they get along with each other. And she said one thing that stood out that she carried with her from that moment she stepped off the plane to the moment she stepped back on the plane to come back to the States was that people greeted each other by saying, I see you. And she made it clear it wasn't I see you as in, okay, I see you there. It was I see you, meaning that I see myself reflected in your existence. I am because we are. And she said everywhere she went, that's the way people dealt with each other. And she said, we don't have that in America. So we do things to each other to be seen, just to get attention. And if we're not getting that attention, we're in a world where anything we say is not believed. Anything our colonizer says is automatically believed, even when it's filmed and it shows that they were actually incorrect. We still don't get believed. We can sit there and have a jury of our so-called peers, and they will freaking literally, you know, the verdict will be against us simply because of the color of our skin. So we're fighting for that attention, but we're fighting each other for it. So it's a bunch of people that have no ability to get any respect from the wider populace that dominates us, fighting amongst ourselves. Basically, the two crabs in the barrel are fighting amongst themselves and accomplishing nothing, wasting time, energy, and attention.
Now, let's mm-hmm. say from just hypothetically,
mm-hmm.
we all begin to have this awakening, right? Where we are actually understanding mm-hmm. what we're reading or seeing happen. We see this cognitive mm-hmm. dissonance going on. Sometimes you just have to go towards it and engage it, because this could be a family member that you're dealing with. Sometimes spouses,
right.
Children, you know, any number of things. But would that be wrong for me to say to just at that particular point in time, just let it be? Because we do learn. We all learn.
I would say, yeah.
But I think sometimes a lot of times we have to get down. You know what I'm saying? Just get down on them. And I think it's exactly for what you said. It's because we can't get down on anybody else, not at this particular moment.
Mm-hmm. And we don't get that respect from the people in charge. So we're trying to get it from each other. Mm-hmm. And because we've been conditioned to look in the mirror and see an enemy, we end up doing violent things to satisfy the part of ourselves that feel like we are just worthless. That's really what it is. When you live in a world that literally just keeps you in a position where you're constantly under pressure, that's why I wanted to discuss that article about stress and how it shrinks the brain, because it's true. So when you start to see people act out and do things that just seem like just completely just unhinged, their brains are shrunk. They don't even have a full however many milliliters of brain material because they've been stressed so much. And that's how you know the term, actually the word stress. We think of stress of things that drive our blood pressure up, make our heart beat. But really, pressure is being put on the brain in a way in which it's shrinking it. Thank you for being with us this evening on Real Life, the radio show with myself, Brother Ross, and Jenna Kepra on Black Talk Radio Network via Foundational Radio. Please give us a call if you wish to make a comment or ask a question at 704-802-5056. Again, that is 704-802-5056. Press ** if you wish to ask a question or make a comment.
Goes right into what we're talking about last week. because this is one of the most deadliest things that I've found in my own personal life. It's about making decisions that can waste your time. You know what I'm saying? It's not even being wasted. It's being put to good use, but for somebody else. And I don't think a lot of us always think in that manner. So we wanted to get into this confirmation bias. Isn't that a cognitive bias? So you ready for this?
It was confirmation bias. There was the rest of the clip from last week that we didn't get to hear. So it starts at minute 18 to minute 7:47.
All right.
Because we were getting into when something Neely Fuller talks about, when you're talking to white people and you're trying to deal with the situation, you know, you must avoid using the word racism or anything of that type, because once you do that, then first of all, then the onus is on you as the victim to prove that the person is racist. So unless the person called you a nigger or some other racial epithet, you have no evidence to support that, and you're literally turning the argument on yourself if you don't have the evidence, number one. Number two, the other response is that white people are going to respond negatively. They're going to jump all over you. I'm not a racist. Who are you calling racist? I have friends that are black, or, you know, my wife is black, or, you know, my best friend is black, so you can't call me a racist. So you're going to get that backlash where they're not going to even want to hear what you have to say, which means all of the constructiveness of the conversation that can help you resolve what's happening to you has now been all marred with this racism thing. So you have to avoid using that term and deal with the incorrect behavior. And this kind of explains that and how white people function, because I've always said when you study them, you realize white people don't have any shame. They can rape a dog, they can rape a child, they can kill someone. They don't have any shame about that. What they do not like is to be exposed and caught. Once they're caught, that's when it's the apologies, the tears start to flow. I've seen white man tears, I've seen white woman tears. That's when all of that happens. But if they could beat you behind without getting caught, they ain't going to tell you sorry. They don't give a crap. They'll probably try and kill you if they could. But once they're caught, once they're on camera, just like the guy, remember you posted that article a couple weeks ago?
Yes, sir.
Where the white guy went off on the black male that came to his place of business, and he called them all kind of niggas, and the brother filmed it. He put it on, I think, his Facebook page. It went viral. And then literally the entire community turned against this guy. They stopped patronizing his business. Actually, within 2 weeks, his business was closing. His wife was going to leave him, and he was pleading, saying that, you know, because this black male posted this video, it ruined his life. This is a racist saying this to a victim of white supremacy, because the community came together and said, we're not going to allow this. We shun you. So that's what I said. Remember, I said that is one of the ways that we as a populace can mitigate racism, white supremacy. If any time a white person acts in a racist manner and it is exposed, the entire community turns against that person. And you see the results. Like I said, there's only two things that white people understand: violence, or you hit them in their pocket. Nobody beat that white man's behind. Everybody just stopped using his business, including other white people. And in 2 weeks, he was pleading and crying, begging that people forgive him and all kind of crap. I was laughing my butt off.
Yeah, we're
that's
gonna,
what happens. That's what should happen every time a person practices racism, white supremacy.
We're going to go on and get into this one, though.
Because the only people that can practice it are white people. Go ahead.
We're going to go on and get into this one, Roz.
Yes, sir.
Philip Matthews Show.
Among many of his base is that Harley Davidson is bad because Trump says it's bad. Now, many other people in his base might like Harley Davidson, but because they don't communicate about it to each other, they don't go out and say, well, despite what 45th says, I still like Harley Davidson. They will have the assumption that other people in his base, that everybody else besides them, doesn't like Harley Davidson. So because of Trump saying. So that's
so is that also part of the illusory truth effect?
The illusory truth effect is more close to the mere exposure effect. The more you're exposed to a false statement, the more you believe that false statement. And so, for example, Trump often calls CNN fake news or something like that, or MSNBC fake news. And his base will tend to think that these news channels are just full of falsehoods, whereas in reality, they're not. not any more than, let's say, Fox News or something like that. Mm-hmm. If you look at actual credible fact checkers that fact check each of these organizations and see how many times they report actual falsehoods. But the illusory truth effect is a subcomponent of that. So the more often you hear a lie, the more likely you are to believe.
What's that quote? You hear a lie long enough or enough times, the truth becomes unbelievable, something to that effect. Hitler's number two guy. So this is great because it's understanding how this works as a cognitive bias, but also from a neuroscience, it's like this is something that's happening in the brain. And it gives us an ability to look at a human being as a human being yes. And saying they are not necessarily at the moment in control of their rational mind or intentional mind. They are triggered by the tribal mind, if you will, from their years of socialization and being a part of that environment that has created that initial trigger. So this is good stuff.
This is very important to see that, because if you don't see that, you'll just presume that other people are bad people just because they have these beliefs. Right. They should be ashamed. They should be guilty. Whereas these are natural intuitions. And right. So the key for us is to, do we play into the natural intuitions as, you know, number 45 and some others would have us do, or do we become more civilized? And so that's
or the fact we, as you said, you know, are all white people, if I'm a black person or African-American person, all white people are bad. If I'm a white person, all black people, all Mexicans, all others are bad. And that is the tribal thinking.
That is the tribal kind of natural and intuitive thinking. That's what we have to realize. Just like eating all the sugar is natural and intuitive. We have to deliberately fight against that in order to be civilized and live in our modern world.
Excellent. And that's a very big point, that you have to fight against it. Otherwise, you just go to the default. Mm-hmm. Attentional bias.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So attentional bias plays into racism in a powerful way, because it's about what is emotionally salient to us. So the whatever is emotionally salient to us, emotionally important to that autopilot system, becomes overwhelmingly important to the rest of us. So for example, if the news media show a story about a black person killing a white person, that news story is going to be powerfully impactful for people. They have visual imagery, they have stories, and people are going to be remembering that rather than the nice, normal black families all around them who would never do a thing like that. So, and these are not families that are shown on television, because the news media definitely tends to show us whatever is negative, whatever will get people's attention, whatever will arouse emotion. So attentional bias, that's a way that it plays into racism. It plays into many other things. So for example, the news media tend to show us airplane crashes very prominently, very frequently. Mm-hmm. However, traveling on airplanes is about 100 times safer than traveling on cars. It's just that car crashes are not nearly as grotesque and large and huge as airplane crashes. So they're not shown on the television, and therefore we don't really think about them as a problem.
And so, again, that attentional bias feeds into that halo and horns as well.
Yes, it does. Absolutely. So whether we like a person, whether we don't like a person.
Here's one that really fascinated me. I mean, I just so freaking love this book, and I'm so happy that you did it. Because when we first talked, you didn't have that book yet. I think you might have been writing it. But you had some other great stuff, and we'll talk about that in upcoming shows. But boy, when you came out with this one, jeez, game changer. What was most fascinating to me about this is the backfire effect. Mm-hmm. You look at the state that we're in America right now, and there are just people, particularly in the current administration, that no matter how much fact you bring to them, and truth and evidence you bring to them, it backfires. I did not know there was such a thing. I just said, well, maybe you just need to try harder. Maybe you need to do this. Maybe you didn't. No, there's an actual mechanism in the brain that backfires. Talk to us about the backfire effect and how that is racialized.
Sure. So the backfire effect is a phenomenon where when we try to correct somebody's misconceptions, the misconceptions may not be corrected and may sometimes even become worse in some situations. It's surprising. We would think, like you said, that, well, when we bring more evidence to the table, they would be more likely to update their beliefs, change their beliefs, and believe in the more accurate thing. That's not how it works. Why? Because of tribalism and community around that. So people perceive themselves to be in tribes, in ideological tribes, tribes of belief. So we talked about the base of Trump, or the same thing that applied to liberal people, and so on. So there's a certain base, and if you admit a certain fact that goes against your tribe's belief, that means that you are going to be excluded from the tribe. People don't want that. Mm-hmm. People don't like that. They don't want to be excluded from that tribal belief. So let's say we talk about Muslims. Let's go back to that. Now, if you go to somebody who is conservative and just doesn't like Muslims, doesn't want Muslim immigrants, and you tell them, hey, look at this evidence. Muslims are not terrorists. This is a ridiculous statement to equate Muslims with terrorists. If you look at the actual statistics, that there are something like, I don't remember, something like 9 Muslims involved in terrorist acts in the US in 2016 out of 1.8 million adult Muslims. Mm-hmm. That's like 1 out of 200,000.
Right.
Some ridiculous number, right? So they will have a really hard time admitting that. And they will often just say, well, whatever, I don't care about what you're saying. You know, Muslims are still terrorists to me, because otherwise they will have to leave their in-group. And the same thing can be about Mexicans, and the same thing can be about white people and black people, you know, admitting that black people actually are quite nice and friendly and just like regular folks next door. They just want the same things that you do. That was going to be really hard for me.
You remember when Obama was running and was against McCain, and there was this lady in the audience when McCain was doing a town hall, and she said, yes, she got up and said, Obama's a Muslim, and then McCain actually corrected her. That was a beautiful example of a backfire effect, right? That was great. That was great. So, and then when it happened with Trump, he just went in and went further in. This is why I think your work today is so radically important. It's probably the most important time in our history for this work. So I'm one of those kind of cats that believe that things happen for a reason. Mm-hmm. So your work is here for a reason. So let's talk about now, we talked about backfire effect. Let's talk about another one of my favorites that we can also look at with this current administration, and we can racialize it. And that is the overconfidence.
Yes. Effect. So we tend to be vastly overconfident about our estimates of reality. When people are asked, you know, are you an above average driver? 93% of college students reply that they're above average drivers. Now think about that. How much experience do they actually have driving, right? So the same sort of estimates apply to the confidence of the Trump administration in its policies. I mean, how many times has the Trump administration tried to, let's say, pass bills that didn't work out, or pass the immigration bill, that, you know, try to change the Obamacare in effective ways? That's an example of with the current administration. And with black people and white people, there's going to be extreme overconfidence on the part of people who are racialized, people who are racist, to have these beliefs to say, oh, you know, this black person, you know, see this black person have an intuitively negative opinion of this black person, even though they don't know anything about this black person. They don't know anything about this black person's characteristic, personality, merit, anything like that. They just have an excessive confidence in their opinions. And we all tend to have an excessive confidence in our opinions. That's something from which we all suffer. So it's really important to focus on being humble and focus on gathering evidence about reality before jumping to conclusion. Mm-hmm.
Do you think the two terms of the Obama administration for those who were whites who were feeling radically, I guess, threatened and marginalized as this country is moving into a brown and diverse space? Because we didn't really, I mean, I knew they were there, but not too many people kind of knew that they, that nothing really had changed. They just, you know, you don't grow up, you just get bigger in a sense. And so when Trump ran, do you think that this was a trigger in response to, well, I don't know if I want more of the same, because more of the same continues to marginalize me. It causes me to challenge my tribal thinking. And I'm comfortable at my default of thinking and my autopilot system. Do you think that the Obama administration, particularly two terms, 8 years, really kind of like triggered that, like almost automatic response, where record numbers of whites came out and voted for Trump, in a sense? That just a new breed that we didn't even, you know, know that was out there.
So we definitely have evidence that's what occurred. According to polls on new voters and on white blue-collar Democrats who voted previously for Obama and for Democrats and now voted for Trump, we know that they had some racist motivations according to polls, according to conversations with them, and new voters who had some racial motivations as well. And it's quite unfortunate that that's what occurred, but it's exactly what occurred. So people felt that not simply was Obama a trigger, but they felt that the country wasn't heading in the direction that they liked. But Trump gave voice to their very negative horn effect sort of intuitions. It's a phenomenon called emotional contagion, where people take on and express the emotions of those they perceive as their leaders. So when Trump was saying things, false things about Mexicans being rapists and criminals and so on, about black people, you know, having it the worst they ever had, something, all of that silly stuff. When he was saying these falsehoods, people were absorbing it and saying, well, if he says it, regardless of whether it's true, I can say it and I can believe it. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of mental gymnastics that were going on in people's minds.
I love that emotional contagion. That's good stuff. And another thing that we need to look at, particularly as it relates to racialized thinking and biases and the 45th, is the Dunning-Kruger effect. I really love that. That changed my life. Because, I mean, I know I've done that. Particularly growing up, you know, you think you know every goddamn thing, you don't know shit, right? You know, let's just keep it real. You know, and so you have a limited amount of information, but you just go and act as if, you know every damn thing. And when I look at our administration, I said, wow, there it is. I had no idea there was a name for it, that this was a science for it. So explain to the public what Dunning-Kruger effect is and how that can be racialized.
Sure. So the Dunning-Kruger effect is a subcomponent of the overconfidence effect. So the Dunning-Kruger effect basically shows that if we have no knowledge, we have a little bit of confidence. If we have a little bit of knowledge, we have a whole lot of confidence. Then as our knowledge grows, we start to learn that we don't know as much as we thought we knew. And so our confidence decreases. But at the stage of very little confidence, we have an excessive, a little amount of knowledge, we have an excessive amount of confidence. So for example, if you remember back in 2016 when Trump was running, he was saying that, well, I have prosecuted the Iraq war and the Afghan war much better than the generals who are prosecuting it. And who was saying that, you know, I'm going to give you great trade agreements, whereas we know, we can see right now what's happening with the tariff war and the trade war, how much it's hurting America. So those are examples. And of course, the same thing about black people and white people. If we see black people in the media as committing various crimes, which are taken as exceptions, in the same way that Muslims commit terrorist acts, and those are put all over television as exceptions. So people who see those things have excessive confidence that they know what black people are about and they know what Muslim people are about, and they don't actually consider the baseline probabilities of how many black people there are in the United States compared to how many commit murders and other criminal acts, how many Muslims there are in the United States compared to how many commit terrorist acts.
Excellent. All right, so then, and I know you have to go because we got about, probably about 5 minutes left here. Illusion of control.
So illusion of control is our perception that we can control events, regardless of whether we can control events or not. And Trump is a perfect example of that. When we talked about Harley Davidson. When Harley Davidson said that they're moving some jobs out of the United States, he started tweeting saying, how can you move jobs out of the United States? That's horrible. That's terrible. You're an American company. I'm going to tax you. Whereas really punitive taxes for a single company for moving jobs out of the United States is not something a president can do. And that's illusion of control, the illusion that he can control events much more than he can. And sort of this sort of paternalistic intuition. And that's, of course, applies to our situation with black people, white people. We imagine that we can control other people around us. Okay. We imagine that we can control our interactions with black people, our interactions with white people, and that they will align with our perceptions of what those people are. And we tend to not change our minds based on whether we interact with these people who don't belong to our tribe. We tend to be too anchored, and we perceive that we can control our perceptions much more than we actually can.
Excellent. Two last biases, catastrophizing.
Yes. So we tend to catastrophize situations much more than we should. Catastrophizing refers to us perceiving that a situation is going to be terrible, horrible, negative. Why does that happen? Well, it happens because of our emotions. Our intuitions are based on the fight or flight response. You remember the flight or flight response from the evolutionary background? We have very strong emotions. We tend to perceive that they will continue for a long time. So if we are scared of somebody who belongs to a different tribal group, then we tend to think that, oh, this fear will continue, or if we're sad about that person or something like that, we tend to perceive that this feeling will continue, whereas it actually reduces very quickly if we don't catastrophize and if we don't think that our immediate intuitive feelings will persist.
Excellent. And lastly, which I also found fascinating, and I saw myself in the data in your book, Ugg Fields.
Yes, Ugg Fields is also quite relevant to racism. So Ugg Fields is basically our negative feelings that we acquire around a certain topic or a person or a phenomenon. So for example, the recent, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was thrown out of the Red Hen establishment restaurant. And now a lot of people who are affiliated and supportive of her are developing an Ugg field around Red Hen restaurant, that one, and others which had nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. So right now they have, oh, this association, Red Hen means bad. And of course, that same thing develops with people who don't belong to our tribal group. Going back to Muslims and black people, we see crimes committed by a black person, again, falsely portrayed as being the essence of what black people are. And the same thing about Muslims committing terrorist acts. So we develop Ugg fields, negative feelings around black people or Muslims, even though that doesn't represent at all what black people are or what Muslims are.
And so white fragility, Dr. Robin DiAngelo's work, would be an Ugg field. It's like when white people are faced with the conversation of racism, or God forbid that they're called a racist or have racist thought, that's an immediate Ugg field.
Yes, so it's a defensive response. So people have a fight or flight response. They perceive a threat and they have a fight or flight response. They either shout back, you know, I'm not racist, how can you say that? Or they're like, no, I'm not going to talk about this. So the first one is a fight response. The second one is a flight response.
Fantastic. Well, this is, you know, you got to come back and we're going to do a series of these things.
Sure.
I can't get enough of you. Dr. Gleb Sapirsky is the author of Truth Seeker's Handbook, a science-based guide, and just run to your phone on Amazon and get that book. Download the Kindle or order the hard copy. It's a nice big thick book, and it becomes the Bible of how you change your thinking. If you feel like you are helpless, hopeless to make a difference in your life, or if you feel that you are being bombarded by life being put on you and you don't know how to handle that, yeah, this is the book. This is the process and this is the work. Dr. Gleb Sapirsky, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was a lot spilt in that, there was a lot being said and a lot I found true.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like
I think he also was practicing racism.
I was just going to say that.
Because When he said that tribal mind, he was describing how white people function. Black people don't even like other black people. The only time I see black people come together in some form of fashion that I would compare to a tribal gathering is if we go to a place where it's overwhelming majority white people and we see like one or two other black people, we tend to make a beeline for them because it's almost like being in a hostile environment for us. So you're looking for that person who looks like you so that you have someone else that is that would understand being in that scenario. So I've seen it in that capacity. But to say that we naturally gravitate towards black people and don't like white people is not true. Because I know some black people that hate black people and they love white people. And they'll tell me, look, I prefer to be around white folks. So the tribal mind that he's talking about is the way white people look at non-white people. It's not the way that we inherently function.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, I understand the point that you're making, and I was seeing it from the I was seeing in practice racism to make it seem like as if we had any kind of power to do something to them. Also, he was talking as if there was an equal playing field. Although he kept mentioning Trump, I seen that he was saying them type of people. So, yeah, it was a lot of racism being played, but it was a lot of great information coming out of that, too. I don't know where Phil Matthews be finding these people, but, yeah, he's showcasing just enough racism not to get him killed for what he done put into this book. He has just those couple of biases is what he's calling them. But just those different ways of practicing, I find that we do that amongst ourselves, and we have to be able to identify these things.
I was about to say that.
We have to be able to identify.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I wanted to just make a quick one, but I want you to finish your thought. Go ahead. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no, you can get right on into it. You know, we have to get away with wasting time.
The other way I've seen. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. What was the last thing you said?
No, I said we just have to be able to identify them so we not wasting time with them. Go ahead.
I agree. Now, the other way I've seen the tribal thing play itself out was when we were dealing with the whole Aboriginal thing, and that's where I also saw it play out in that tribal way where, like, if you weren't with that particular ideology – not necessarily saying that what they're saying was completely incorrect, but you weren't down with the version of things that they were propagating because it didn't fall in line with historical fact.
Right.
Then you became on the outs of that particular group. You might be talked about and disrespected. And that's where I've seen that, like, now. And the only other way that I've seen us function tribally is with gangs. Those are the circumstances under which I've seen that tribal thing is where it's either gang related or when I was doing music, it was what crew you was with, who you was rolling with. Like I said, if black people are in the area where there are not many black people, but a whole lot of white people, we will gravitate towards each other for comfort. Even if it's psychological, we're not going to be hugging and feeling on each other,
right,
but just
right.
being in each other's presence, probably talking to each other.
I'm glad
and just
you added
up
that.
Things. Yeah, so there's very few circumstances under which we can say we function in a tribal way like that. Whereas on the continent, it's actually tribal because, you know, you have to go through certain rituals into adulthood. You might get scarification, which will associate you with a particular group. So this actually tribal there. Not saying that it's not actually tribal here, because it can be. Sometimes when you look at, you know, quote unquote, the northeastern blacks versus southern blacks, and the way that we talk and our different cultural expressions and mannerisms, there used to be a tribal thing about that. But I think with the advent of hip hop, the lines have just blurred where everybody just kind of melded. We all using the same slang, no matter where it comes from. As some new slang is brought out, everybody adopts it now. Whereas back in the days, it was different. You know, we had the tribal thing. Thank you for being with us tonight on Real Life, the radio show on Foundational Radio via Black Talk Radio Network. If you wish to ask a question or make a comment, please give us a call at 704-802-5056. Press ** if you wish to ask a question or make a comment. Again, give us a call at 704-802-5056. Press ** if you wish to ask a question or comment. You are live with Real Life, the radio show with myself, Ross, and my co-host, Jenna Keprock.
Appreciate these, Brother Roz. Those are always dope.
Thanks, brother. I'm glad we're able to put them to use. I knew there would come a time where I could utilize them, and it was like the ancestors just said, these need to sit for a minute. There's going to be an appropriate time and place to present them. So thank you.
For those of you that's listening, welcome back to Real Life, the radio show. Hopefully this conversation is constructive to where these smaller tidbits will help you. But for the conversation me and Roz was just having, these breaks that we have, that's Brother Roz. He created that, so appreciate that, man. Getting back into the show. Once again, it was a lot being told, a lot of actions being exposed. And you say this all the time, man, we be taking on their behavior, and then they ridicule and punish us for taking on their behavior. Right now, I'm in a particular situation.
That was powerful.
I'm in a particular situation, leaving my safe space. Just to be out, and now I have given these suspects a chance to take away my time, and that's once again that's what made me think about this show, just to pass that on. And I know we all know this, but when somebody else tell you, and all they have done was try to help you, sometimes you look at things differently. So I wanted to just add that. What was you saying, Brother Roz?
Sure. Oh, I was just saying, when he got to the UGG field, I find that to be powerful, because when we went through that situation with the whole Aboriginal thing, there was an UGG field around the term African, an UGG field around the word Black. Anytime it was brought up, it was attacked. And that's what I was talking about last week earlier this evening. When I talked about, if something is being done that is incorrect, especially on the job, even if because we know as victims of racism what racism looks like, you might know that in your heart that the person is practicing racism because of the context of how the situation went down. But you bring up racism, it's going to create an UGG field. They're going to get immediately defensive. And again, it goes from the incorrect behavior that's driving you to seek assistance to you now having to prove that this person is racist.
Right, right.
So your intention to try and help yourself is completely thwarted by the fact that you put the word, the big pink elephant word, and I'm not going to use a metaphor, let me not say that. You're going to take the word that agitates them the most and put it into the conversation. And then at that point, because they're the ones in power, the onus is on you. Now you have to play lawyer. What made you call them racist? Did they call you a nigger? Did they call you some other racial epithet? I don't think so. Next thing you know, you're being terminated because you quote unquote defamed this white person's character and couldn't prove it, versus the fact that they may have mistreated you in a way that violated the guidelines of your handbook. So if you focused on the issue, the handbook, which is the company rule book, will get them corrected immediately for that, and you didn't even have to bring up racism to do so. Once you bring up racism, they're going to get an ugh feel. It's going to be repel, repel, repel. I'm not racist. You know, like I said, I'm going to give you every excuse in the world as to why I'm not racist.
Yo,
so that's what I meant with the ugh feel. And with black folks, it's surrounding topics that occupy time, energy, and attention.
Perfect
and
transition.
We get into this gang mentality about ideas. And if certain people don't follow the ideas or the religion or the philosophy that we adhere to or we claim to adhere to, then we go gang style. It's them against us versus, yeah. Oh, they have a different way that they want to deal with racism versus the way that my group deals with racism. Maybe we could connect around dealing with racism, maybe not around ideology.
Man, you just...
Go ahead, I'm sorry about that.
We can end the show. No, that was the point, yo. Like, seriously, we continuously fighting, continuously bumping heads. Sometimes it even get fun because, truth be told, it's points in your life where you don't have nothing to do. You don't feel constructive. And you begin to become that person looking for that fight.
Yeah.
When instead of just trying to find a way to solve the problem. And me personally, I don't think no one person is going to solve it. There's always a possibility. We have all been endowed with great spirits and souls. One person could, but just in my opinion, I don't think so. So just passing that knowledge around, getting the people that you love prepared to deal with that in a particular type of manner.
Absolutely.
That's the time that we should be given. Things that I try to do myself, all of the stuff we be discussing, it's being practiced and put in action. So, but we don't though. Just truth be told, a lot of times we just don't. So when you notice these things, when you begin to be able to eyeball these particular actions, emotions, steer clear. Don't even give them your energy to have to get rid of them. Just steer clear.
Minimize contact to minimize conflict.
Man, I didn't even think about that.
Just ease back and just leave the surroundings. Find someplace peaceful, get your zen back, and focus on things that are worth your while. Like Gus always says, find something else that is constructive to do with your time and energy, because that is a waste of your time right there. You know,
perfect example.
What I wanted to jump into is that. Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah. Right before you get into that, Roz. Perfect example.
I was just gonna say I wanted to jump into the last video because I wanted to deal with the importance of words and how we waste our time trying to do things and plead for things that we're not gonna get in the system of white supremacy. But go ahead.
Yeah, we gonna get into that and we're gonna get it all the way through too. But I was just gonna say, I seen in BTR. Well, I seen it before that, but I seen a discussion. I don't know if you noticed it, but Kanye done back to tweeting again, and he said some people done used him.
Yeah.
Now that's gonna cause up a big old stir, right? It's gonna be people saying, "I told you he was."
I can see Snoop Dogg and a bunch of them coming out the woodwork.
In that particular thread, though, the same way I didn't mention a whole bunch of stuff that he said, just the things that I felt was important. How many people are going to start arguing all over again about this, wasting time instead of putting their time towards those things that he did say up there at the desk, the 13th Amendment?
Yeah, I responded to what you posted about that. Yeah.
Most likely not many. And that's where that problem lies, giving your time away to something productive versus wasting it arguing about Kanye. But let me get to this. Those are perfect examples.
For sure.
Let me find this for you.
Sure. It's not that long either, but I just think it's very powerful. What's being said and how it's being broken down, I think, is just phenomenal. And I think it'll help shape people's consciousness around this word, its use, and the psychological effects it has on us and other people who use it.
All right, well, you ready?
Yes, sir.
On your book, or in your book, rather, you have But Fair Housing Projects by a variety.
The idea of fair. Oh, okay.
Right, and I think that just that term, when you have a term that can represent justice, validity, reasonableness, beauty, and white, is, in my opinion, an extraordinary tool of white supremacy. And in my opinion, it's surprising that more people have not said, hey, wait a minute, maybe we shouldn't use fair as a term that's synonymous with justice and white. You're not treating me fairly. You're not treating me like a white person. Just that one term right there, I think, is a phenomenal example of what you talk about, where the white supremacy is coded in such a way that people don't even pay attention to it. They're totally blind to the racist implications of a term like that. Does that make sense?
Well, one of the points that I try to make is that part of the project of white supremacy is to really co-opt a lot of the language so that things come to mean what white people want them to mean. And I haven't specifically studied fair, but I'm perfectly willing to believe that it's one of those words that have been co-opted.
I mean, who's the fairest of them all? I think all of these so-called fairy tales that I've seen, it's generally a white woman who's saying that. Well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. I think a lot of the white people.
I hadn't really thought of that. That's interesting. I suspect, being a linguist, that fair meaning of fair skinned and stuff like that, and the fair in fairy, and the fair in the fair that's like just or even handed. I strongly suspect that those have three different etymological sources, but I don't know that. I can't tell you what they are right now, but I can see why people would associate them.
I strongly suspect the system of white supremacy has co-opted all of that, and I would just encourage anyone, take a look at the way those terms are used. You will see, particularly if you have an understanding of racism, white supremacy, it'll be glaring. I was going to say, many of the folks that you quote in your book, Timothy Wise, or he's not quoted, but Timothy Wise, Dr. Joe Fagan, Dr. Karen Brodkin, many of those folks have been on the program. In fact, every white person that I have questioned about that term, they have totally agreed, and they, even if they haven't thought about it, they have immediately seen the racist implications of that term.
They use the word fair a lot to equate with justice. Well, the word fair means white. Treat me fairly. Treat me like a white person. That's what it sounds like they're saying.
Yeah.
And then they equate that with justice, but the two words don't even sound alike.
Mm.
The word fair and the word justice. So I suspect that the white supremacists made the word fair and incorporated it with the word justice in order to direct attention to, if you want justice, you have to go through somebody white.
On the wall, who is fairest of them all?
My queen, on this day, one has come of age fairer even than you. She is the reason your powers wane.
Who is it?
Snow White.
Snow White.
I think that term fair supports racism, white supremacy. We have a term that can be used to signify beauty, logic, correctness, being valid, reasonable, and white. And I just think that it implies, in a not so subtle way, it relates, it connects being white with being correct, being valid, being just, being beautiful, and at the exact same time, anyone who is not white is not logical, is not valid. valid, is not reasonable, is not beautiful. And I really have made a consistent effort to inform people of that connection and why I think we shouldn't use that term. We should try to use other words that don't have that racial connotation to support white supremacy. Does what I just said make sense? And would you be willing to not use the term fair? I'd like to say not use that term anymore at all when you discuss racism, white supremacy, or anything else, because it supports racism, but at least not use it for this program.
I'm happy to go along with your guidelines. I don't quite understand your challenge of that term, but I'm happy to do my best to go along with your wishes on that, and I'll certainly think about what you described there.
Okay. I will be brief. I don't want to hog all the time, but this is very important, so I will take 40 seconds to see if I can do a better job explaining. You've heard some of the so-called fairy tales where they say who's the fairest of them all, who is the most attractive of them all. Is that accurate?
Sure. And
okay.
By fairness, if you're referring to it, the definition as it relates to beauty, I don't believe that was the way I used the term fairness. It's also a term that is synonymous with justice, and that is the sense that I use it.
Exactly. What I'm saying is the term is synonymous with justice and being white and being beautiful and being reasonable. And I'm saying that when you use that term, even though you say I'm using it for justice, you know, black people are not treated fairly. And you say, I mean, they're not treated justly. That's all well and dandy, but I guess I'm saying that subconsciously, consciously, because that term is also associated with being white, when you say black people are not being treated fairly, you really could say that black people are not being treated whitely. They're not being treated as though they are white, and it would still be accurate. That's what I mean about the close and intimate nature of the word fair being related to white and justice and beauty and correctness. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
When you and Gus were speaking about the word fair earlier, you said that it refers to beauty. Do you mean white beauty or just beauty?
Are you talking to me or the guest?
The guest, because he was the one who used it.
I think that the host had used the term beauty, and then I had echoed that term. I think that it's a...
I don't think Gus used the term beauty at all.
Uh-huh. And if he didn't, then I would be mistaken. But I understand the distinction he was making in the terminology, which was more of a reference to the complexion of one's skin, and that can then be associated with some of the other meanings of that same word. So I think that I was trying to understand, you know, his association with that term as a marker of one's lightness of skin color.
Okay, so you're saying that you mean by white? I mean, do you mean by beauty or white beauty? Can you please pick one?
Well, I don't think that anyone's skin color is more beautiful than anyone else's. I understand that that's not what the popular media tries to instill in us, but my own notion of beauty is not not about, you know, skin color.
Okay.
Thank you, Doug. I did want to, just in the interest of being correct, it's not my notion of the term fair. This is in the dictionary. You can look this up, any website. You can get an Oxford dictionary that's not abridged, you'll see all of the definitions that are associated with the term fair. If you get a quality dictionary, I suspect the term fair probably will take up a good page, maybe a half a page, just defining all the different uses of the term. I'll just give you two really quick before I proceed. The first definition, how about this? Free from bias, dishonesty, or injustice. Then if you keep going down, I'm looking at dictionary.com. If you go all the way down to definition number 12, and there are more, you get of a light hue, not dark, white. So that's what I'm saying. It's not my association. It's in the dictionary.
Sure.
At any rate.
Okay, Roz.
Yes, sir.
To bring in the great Gus. That's because I still have the same, just like the suspect that was on with the Phil Matthews, the doctor and the author.
Yeah.
Like he stated that repetitiveness creates the truth out of a lie. And I'm just going to be
Joseph Goebbels.
I'm just going to be repetitive with my same with after hearing that. When we begin to notice these type of thought processes where people just can't understand, don't waste your time continuing trying to make them understand. And I've been saying that all night. Go ahead, Brother Ross.
Yeah, I was just saying the reason why I thought that was important is because we use these words really frivolously. Say it again.
I said, and it's not just fair, you know, just the American language is double speak. So we have to notice it, though.
Go ahead. Oh, yeah. And the thing about it is that there's, like you said, there's many words that we use that if we really thought about it, they would be incorrect to use because they have an undercurrent racial connotation that always affect you subconsciously. The thing is, everything that you do in life is recorded on your subconscious. There's not one moment of your waking life from the time you open your eyes fresh out the womb to the day you close your eyes that is not recorded in your subconscious. It's just that it has an effect on you in a way that's why I call it subconscious, meaning below your consciousness. These things affect you in a way that you are not consciously aware of it, and your use of the term just reinforces a form of cognitive dissonance. Everything white is beautiful, is just, it's logical. And you start thinking, well, the natural inclination is the antonym to that would be to be black and all the negative definitions that go along with that. So, and that's just in using a word like fair. And then also when I've seen our people use the term fair, it's usually in a whining manner and they're talking about how something isn't fair. They're not being treated whitely. And the truth is you will never be treated whitely in a system of white supremacy and you are considered black by the people who are in control of your reality. That's just not going to happen. So when we do those things, that's why I said you always want to address the incorrect behavior. You don't want to say something made you feel a certain way because it's not about your feelings. It's about the facts. We have to get past the emotion and deal with the situation for what it is. And only when the person is exposed as a racist, if they say they're racist, if they say something racist that you know for a fact is like, okay, only racists say this type of stuff, then I wouldn't even call them a racist. I would actually say this. You're giving me a reason to suspect that you're practicing racism because the term that you use is a term that only racist people have been known to use. So I'm not calling you a racist. I'm saying the phrase that you use makes me suspect that you're practicing racism, white supremacy. At that point, the onus is not on you to prove anything. You're just saying, look, I'm calling, quote unquote, a duck because you're quacking right now. But I'm not calling you that directly where you can get defensive and create an UGG field around me saying you're a racist. I'm saying I'm suspecting that this is racist behavior. Now, you need to show me where what you just said is not racist, because I'm suspecting that that's the direction that you're leading me to. It's not a foregone conclusion. It's something you're leading me to with whatever you said or did. No, that's one phrase you can use to protect yourself. Go ahead.
Yo, we always got to keep our goals in mind and yes, not sir. Let anyone or anything detract us from that.
For sure.
With that being said, please, 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 as I'm doing myself, do not allow your time to be wasted. And if you will, when you close out, Brother Raj, you give us the prayer. Peace.
Absolutely. All right. Peace. Thanks for being with us this evening, Tuesday, October 30th. We greatly appreciate it. We will see you next week, Tuesday. I hope everyone stays out of the clutches of race soldiers and slave catchers. That is just not something you want to deal with, especially now that we're coming into election time. This is when they like to put out their numbers of how many people they arrest and how hard they are on crime, so you don't want to be caught up in that sweep. So, thanks for being with us this evening. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying you do not want to be caught up in that sweep. Continue on. My apologies.
No problem. And I will reiterate, Gus, too, sobriety will be best under a system of white supremacy. You want to have all your faculties together in case you do run into a race soldier or a slave catcher, so you can, correctly defend yourself psychologically and verbally. There's something that a skill that you quickly lose if you're inebriated. So please do so if you plan to be out and about. And other than that, just stay out of their clutches. Just do everything you can to not even engage. Minimize contact to minimize conflict, as the brilliant Neely Fuller would say. So we're going to say the prayer and then close out tonight. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another Black person. Like Bess always says, it has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Also, end human trafficking and the prison slavery industrial complex. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Once again, peace and love to you. Thanks for spending your Tuesday evening with us. Stay safe, and we'll see you next week, creative willing.
Peace.
One love.
One love. We'll see y'all next week.